Thanks for listening to the Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
Now let's get this party started.
You're listening to Fox Sports Radio.
What up? Welcome in. This is the Herd. Wherever you may be and however you may be making this part of your day, thanks so much. I'm Doug Gottlieb, filling in for Colin Cowherd, our fearless leader. The Herd is brought to you by Jersey Mike's Subs, a sub above. Welcome in. It is a Wednesday. It is a hump day. We are 2.5-3 days removed from the Tampa Bay Buccaneers being crowned Super Bowl champions. How about that? If you're not a social media guy, you should note that Colin, we missed him. We didn't know. Put out an Instagram yesterday going through a little health scare, but he's good. He's fine. He just tweeted out that Charles Barkley called him this morning. I called him several times. He didn't tweet about it at all. Charles Barkley calls him, and his wife Ann spits out her coffee. Can't believe how thoughtful and considerate Charles Barkley is. Nonetheless, The Herd is brought to you by Jersey Mike's Subs. Be a sub above. This is interesting. You know, I watched Sunday, and for people who listen to the Doug Gottlieb Show, it's daily, 3 to 6 Eastern time, 12 to 3 Pacific. All week I said Tampa in the under. Thought that Tampa would run the football a ton. Thought that Tampa would be able to get after Pat Mahomes without blitzing a ton because the Chiefs' offensive line was so depleted. Now, I didn't know that the Chiefs wouldn't put into place enough protections for Pat Mahomes where he never felt like he set his feet. And we'll talk about Mahomes and his performance and why no one will say what everybody thinks in watching him in 2 Super Bowls, but nonetheless. You know, afterwards, he didn't say anything negative about his coach, his coaching staff, their preparation, his offensive line. Hell, Sammy Watkins, you know, if you're double-teaming Travis Kelce, if you're double-teaming Tyreek Hill, it stands to reason that Sammy Watkins should be open, wasn't open a ton, right? There was no mention of wide receivers not getting open, offensive line not blocking, coaching staff not preparing, coaching staff not adjusting. None of that. There was simply accountability. Hey, we got to get better. You know, this is Pat Mahomes after the game.
A lot of times it gets put on that O-line because I'm scrambling around. But if we're not executing as far as me making the right reads and getting the ball out of my hand to the receivers on time, then nothing's going to work. They get that blame sometimes, but it's not deserved because, I mean, a lot of it's on me and people just don't see it that way.
How about that? Hey, I know people want to say it's on them, but it's on me. Now, I want you to consider that, okay? Now, here's a kid who's in his fourth, he just completed his fourth year in the NFL, and he's had an unbelievable amount of success. Didn't start his first year except for game 16. Started his second year, was the MVP of the league. They lose in the AFC Championship game on an offsides call, which was a good call, but one in which nullified an interception that would have won them the game. His third year in the NFL, they trail in all three playoff games, come from behind all three games, including the Super Bowl. He's the Super Bowl MVP. Fourth year in the NFL, again, goes well. They don't dominate, but they're clearly the best team in the AFC. They get to a Super Bowl, and they get annihilated. And a good portion of the reason was that he was under duress the entire game. And he offered no parachutes for himself. Instead, simply a soft landing for his offensive line. Hey, I know they get some of the blame or a lot of the blame, but mostly it's not on them. It's on me. I got to get rid of the football. This is Russell Wilson, who, not as highly touted, drafted later in the draft, did start his rookie year, you know, has been to 2 Super Bowls, 1-1. This is Russell Wilson yesterday on the Dan Patrick Show on why he should have say in personnel decisions.
I think that ultimately for me personally, I think that I want to be able to be involved, because at the end of the day, it's your legacy. It's your team's legacy. It's, you know, it's the guys you get to go into the huddle with. And at the end of the day, those guys you got to trust.
Are you involved in personnel decisions? Have you been involved in personnel decisions?
Not as much. I don't, you know, I think that, you know, for,
do you
for me,
want to be involved, Russ?
Yeah, I think it helps. I think it helps to be involved more. But I think that dialogue should happen more often, in my opinion.
Everyone's talking about what Russell Wilson said in terms of should he have a say, should he not have a say. I just can't believe what he said, right? This is 2 days removed from him being the Walter Payton Man of the Year. Now, I understand that has to do with your good works off the football field, okay? But one would think that if you're thoughtful and giving of your time, of your money, of your energy, of your resources for the greater good of the world or a specific part of the community, you would have the same sort of thought process in your work, you know? But he told reporters yesterday he was tired of being hit. He told Dan Patrick he wants some say in personnel decisions. He's throwing his offensive line under the bus when he is just as, if not more, guilty than Pat Mahomes of holding on to the football too long. For the entirety of Russell Wilson's career, ask yourself, Sunday afternoons, East to West Coast, when you turn on the Seahawks game, what are you used to seeing? Russell Wilson running around trying to make a play on the last drive of the game. That's how every Seahawk game seems to be on repeat. It's like Groundhog Day, again and again. And whether or not his offensive line stinks, or his running game isn't good enough, or his offensive coordinator, of course they've made a change this year, his offensive coordinator didn't fit with his skill set. Whatever the reason is, you got another dude who just lost a Super Bowl and was clearly under duress, and the coaching staff clearly didn't prepare or adjust well to the type of pressure he was seeing, and the offensive line was totally depleted by injury. And he was 100% accountable. And now you have Russell Wilson, who won a Super Bowl, lost a Super Bowl, in which he threw the game-losing interception, by the way. Like, we talk all about, well, they should have given to Marshawn Lynch. They should have done this. Like, Russell Wilson threw the pick. That's it. End of story. Josina Anderson said, a text from a source, I know this. Nobody is trading Russell Wilson. All you can do is fix the O-line and learn new offense. We all knew that. Can't compare yourself to Brady. Oh, he compared himself to Brady and to LeBron James. Like, look, this dude needs to get over himself. This dude is so entitled, it is silly. And I like Russell Wilson. I think most people like Russell Wilson. It's fun to watch him. Got a great arm. Got great legs. Seems to understand how to keep his balance and be ready for the big moment. He's as good as anybody has ever been in the history of the National Football League of moving, setting his feet quickly, and having great power and accuracy throwing the football. He's fantastic. But dude, what are you doing? I'm tired of being hit. That's calling out the offensive line. I want player personnel. I want to be involved in player personnel. Okay. The adage or the slogan in the NFL is do your job. Your job is to play quarterback, not to try and go and pick out the groceries. But Russell, to me, comes across as the opposite of what he would like to be perceived as, and especially with the Walter Payton Man of the Year Award. All right, speaking of quarterbacks, I saw a fascinating story today. A running back who wants to join Tom Brady. And that running back ruined it for other running backs, just like Tom Brady is ruining it for other quarterbacks. 7 Super Bowl wins, 10 Super Bowl appearances have ruined it for everybody. What'd he ruin? I'll tell you in a minute.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
Doug Gottlieb for Colin. This is The Herd. What do you get when you cross a Mercedes with a race car? You get chills. You get goosebumps. There's really no other way to say it. OMG, AMG. Visit MBUSA.com/AMG, Mercedes AMG, driving performance. Did you guys see this story that Adrian Peterson would like to play with Tom Brady, right? Adrian Peterson, the ageless running back, which, you know, it's interesting, right? Like Leonard Fournette, who hand it to Leonard, don't throw it to Leonard. That's one thing that I think we've learned here during the playoffs. But Leonard Fournette had success, and now Adrian Peterson, who, can you guess how old Adrian Peterson is? By the way, he ran for the Detroit Lions this year, and for 604 yards. Last year, 898 yards with the Washington football team. Year before that, 1,000 yards at 33 years old. Now, in terms of receiving, you know, only 18 targets this year, 12 catches, 17 and 20. Like, he's an old-school classic running back. But what people need to remember about Adrian Peterson, or most of us remember, is that AD, and just so we're aware, his nickname is AD. His initials are AP. Adrian Peterson's nickname is All Day, always has been, because when he's a little kid, he ran around, he had energy all day, right? So it was AD. AD, at 26 years old, tore his ACL. The next year, he returned, played a full season, and had a 2,000-yard season. He averaged 131.1 yards rushing. And what did that do? It completely changed how we viewed running backs, how we viewed anybody coming off a torn ACL, right? He ruined it for everybody. That's exactly what Tom Brady is doing for the National Football League. Like, look, I've heard all these discussions about, well, you know, had Mahomes beaten Brady, he could catch Brady. Now, but now, it's really hard. You know, 7-1. It's very difficult. Very difficult. Difficult. Nobody in the NFL plays quarterback's been to more than 5 Super Bowls. I mean, he's the outlier's outlier. And I understand that the way in which quarterbacks are protected now, they're less likely to be hurt and they can play longer. There's a reason these guys are playing longer, right? But Phillip Rivers is a great quarterback, but he was washed for the last 2 years. Drew Brees is going to retire this year. He was washed for the last 2 years. Like, that's normal. Just like Adrian Peterson is the outlier's outlier. Most guys struggle their first year back. Second year back, they're usually back to being close to their old selves. And then, of course, their career is shortened because once you go in, have that thing redone, there's always something else that's going to go wrong, or it begins early, like your knee is never the same. That's, and I hate this word sometimes, normal. Abnormal is Adrian Peterson at 35 years old, still having some gas in the tank after suffering 10 years ago a debilitating ACL injury, then coming back and comeback player of the year, MVP of the league. Tom Brady's, like, you hear Russell Wilson, I want to play till I'm 40 something. That Aaron Rodgers, I want to play in my 40s. Like, the only guy who's had real success in their 40s is this guy. And he screwed up the whole thought process of what makes an incredible career. He's been to 10 Super Bowls. Do you realize how unlikely that is? Yeah, there's some luck to it. There's the credit of playing in a bad division with the best coach in the history of football and being the most successful quarterback in the history of football. But when we use that as our guide to greatness, it's completely skewed. It's like if you or I, we compare our salaries to that of professional athletes. Like, we can't. The scale is completely off because most people, they don't. That's not normal. That's something, if you create a graph, right? That's something, a complete outlier to wherever you are on the S-curve. And that's what Brady is. You cannot use his career, his success, his numbers, his longevity, his ability to do it as long as he's done it, as anywhere close to a guide for what's a reasonable sense of what a great quarterback is. Every other great quarterback, I mean, look, Dan Marino's great. He went to one Super Bowl. And it was early in his career, and everybody thought, ah, he's going to be back five or six times. He played for a great coach in Don Shula. He never sniffed the Super Bowl again, ever. And he played forever. Played like 13 more years and never got to a Super Bowl again, playing for Don Shula. Whereas Brady now, like, he's not using the performance enhancers that Bonds did, but that's what Bonds did for, you know, that's really the problem with the steroids and the home run chase and why I wouldn't put him in the Baseball Hall of Fame. It's not that he led the league in home runs. He had 73, so it completely changes how we look at any number. Because once you've seen 73, you're like, well, nothing else compares. Of course not. You take an all-time great, you pump him full of steroids. Late in his career, he has this ridiculous surge in a ballpark that's built to the way he hits a baseball. Brady has ruined it for everybody because they all think they can on some level play as long and as well as long as he's played. Let's get to Ryan Music with the news.
No.
Turn on the news.
This is the Herdline News.
Well, Doug, a very fine good morning to you. How are you doing?
Good
today?
Morning to you, sir.
Well, let's get started with some quarterbacking news in the NFL, Doug. It is the news that everyone has been waiting on. Taylor Heinicke agrees to a 2-year contract with the Washington football team. Obviously, a little bit tongue-in-cheek there, but the young quarterback who made a little bit of noise, if you will, in their playoff game against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers and Tom Brady that you were just discussing when he threw for over 300 yards, a touchdown, and also rushed for a touchdown in the loss. But Washington moving forward, giving him a 2-year deal worth just under $9 million. And now the question becomes, Washington, who most people think has a pretty great overall roster and a really great young defense, the two quarterbacks on their roster heading into the 2021 season, Taylor Heinicke and Alex Smith.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see if they're in the quarterback market at all. I mean, look, somebody's going to try this, and I wonder if it's going to be the Washington football team. Somebody's going to try having a quarterback or having two or three quarterbacks that make, you know, less than 10, you know, the $5 million variety. The Andy Dalton, Taylor, who's far more accomplished than Taylor Heinicke, but at this point his career seat is a backup, right? Because the magic to having a quarterback on a rookie contract, especially a non-first-round rookie contract, is it gives you a window of 2 or 3 years where you can spend on everything else. And I think that's what Washington's going to try and do. Their front four is fantastic. Terry McLaurin is outstanding. They need more help. They need more talent on the offensive side of the ball. They need to continue to work on the offensive line and, of course, on the skill position players. And if you just have a guy who's fine at quarterback, is that enough? It's kind of the opposite of the way the Cowboys are trying to build. But the Cowboys, of course, built themselves because they had Dak Prescott under a rookie contract. Instead of a rookie contract, this is a veteran deal that's minimal money in comparison to everybody else in the league. I don't know if they're going to draft somebody, right? But this to me signifies they're not going to trade for somebody. And it would be interesting to see if they're the team that goes headlong in the wind and says, look, we don't need the world's greatest quarterback. We got an unbelievable defensive front. Let's get better weapons on offense. And let's just have a placeholder at quarterback where we can spend our money elsewhere.
Yeah, and I think I know we've talked about this on our show in the past, the Doug Gottlieb show, that is, that you've always wondered what exactly they plan on doing with Alex Smith. And that contract has sort of been something that's held them back for a little while now. So I'm sure they're also waiting to sort of see what his future may be in the NFL before they make any final decisions. And we will wrap it up with this, Doug, turning our attention to the NBA. Steph Curry has had a pretty remarkable bounce back season after an injury-riddled season last year. He scored 32 in a win over the Spurs. His head coach, Steve Kerr, said something that he actually also said last week, so he's doing a bit of an MVP campaign for Steph Curry, saying he believes that Steph Curry is playing the best basketball of his career right now. Last six games for Steph Curry, averaging almost 36 points a game, 58% from the field, almost 53% from three-point land. Chef Curry is back.
No, he's unbelievable. And I think what's going to be fascinating is, you know, the construct of this team was great before because he's not really a point guard. And he played with other guys that are quasi-point guards. Draymond Green, 11 assists last night. Draymond Green is kind of their de facto point guard. And trying to learn how to play with Andrew Wiggins and Kelly Oubre, Eric Pascal, Kent Bazemore, right? Brad Wanamaker. Like, that's a challenge. I don't understand how people want to dismiss Steph Curry and his greatness. Like, I don't think you can win a championship solely with Steph, building around Steph per se. But there's a reason he was a two-time MVP. He is a spectacular talent, a carry-a-team sort of talent. Now, can he carry him to an NBA championship? No, not without Klay, not without more help. But it's pretty obvious that this guy has recovered from his injuries, and he's back to the form that he saw even before Kevin Durant joined his team.
But doesn't it feel like we need to move past this sort of demarcation that, well, if they don't win a title, then it was just like an awful season? I mean, I think considering what he's doing, as you mentioned, with all the talent around him, just because they don't win another NBA title shouldn't somehow sum it all up to, well, look, you know, Steph clearly can't do it if he doesn't have Klay or Durant on his team.
Oh, I agree with you. I completely agree with you. You don't have to win a championship to have a good year or to prove where you are in the league. You know, but it's as much a media problem and a fan problem as it is an NBA problem, in that we've created this, you either win a title or you had a crummy year sort of scenario. But I completely agree with you. That's Ryan Music with the news.
Well, that's the news.
And thanks for stopping by.
The Herdline News.
All right, let's welcome in Brock Huard, of course, Fox Sports NFL analyst. He played six seasons in the National Football League with the Hawks. Growing up, you know, played at UW. He was Gatorade National Football Player of the Year in the state of Washington. Let me ask you, Russell Wilson goes on Dan Patrick yesterday, says, you know, essentially, I'd like to have some personnel decision-making. He told reporters he's tired of getting hit. Like, what is he trying to accomplish?
Yeah, it's a good question, Doug, and one that we're bantering about in the Pacific Northwest quite a bit, because you usually hear this around negotiation time. About the only time that Russell, if you go look at the Gottlieb show or the Herd in the different times off the field you have heard from Russell, it has been around his negotiation. And his team and the people around him, I think, have done a very good job. He's been paid incredibly handsomely and on his, third contract in Seattle. And you don't normally hear from him off the field unless it's about getting his money. And this is a little bit different. This is a little bit unique. I think this is Russell sitting there at the Super Bowl in that commissioner's box with Mr. Goodell watching it going, gosh, for a lot of my career, I've had to look like Mahomes. I've been the one that's been hit 30 times a game. I'm the one that's been running around. I'm the one doing that. And I'd sure like, as I get into my mid-30s and he wants to play till he's 45, I'd sure like it to look like it did for Tom, where I could play extra pass, get the ball out of my hand, and not take the beating. And it's not even the 394 sacks. That's been referenced a lot through 9 years, more than any quarterback in the league. It's the hits. It's the hurries. It's the pounding his body has taken. It's a commitment, Doug, that he makes to making sure that he's at every practice in every game as he has been for 9 years. And I think you hear a player say, we need to protect better. Now, is that the right attitude? Is that the right way to go about it? I don't see a lot of upside in making it public when he's got 3 more years on his deal. John Schneider just got extended and Pete's extended. So I don't know why this had to be done in the private manner. The public manner. I don't think there's a ton of upside, but obviously he and his team felt like they wanted to have his voice heard.
Doug Gottlieb in for Colin. This is the Herd. Is it possible? This is a thought that I had. He was in the commissioner's box and Antonio Brown catches a touchdown pass. And if we remember when Antonio Brown was suspended, the two guys that he worked out with were Tom Brady and Antonio Brown, right?
Yep.
And he ends up with Tom Brady in Florida. And again, I don't think it's solely about Antonio Brown, but I'm just wondering out loud is if you went to Pete or you went to John Daniels and you're like, look, we can have Antonio Brown. I mean, excuse me, John Schneider. If you go to, I said John Daniels, that's the Rangers guy. Yep. If you go to John Schneider and you're like, look, we can get Antonio Brown, just tell me, I'll make the call, I'll make it happen. And they're like, I can't do it, can't do it. Yep. And then, you know, you get in the playoffs, and in addition to not having a great offensive line and struggling with the run game, you only have one wide receiver. Now they're taking away DK Metcalf. Is there possible that you're watching Antonio Brown catch a touchdown in the Super Bowl and you're thinking like, what am I doing here where I can recruit a guy and I still can't get my team to buy in?
Well, I think it's possible that he views himself, and he probably can make a pretty strong case that he's got more equity than Deshaun Watson, that he's got a ton of leverage, that he's done enough in 9 years and 8 Pro Bowls, you know, much like Tom, you know, surrounded himself with a cast of characters. I think that is what you're hearing. I don't know if it's necessarily Antonio, because his off the field record kind of speaks for itself, and I don't think Jody Allen, Paul Allen's sister who's running the club, was probably terribly excited about that, nor some of the others in the building there. I do think it is just flexing his power muscle. Players have more voice, more power. They're more empowered than they've ever been. And I think this is a little bit of a flex job saying, hey, man, we got to get it right. A year ago at the Pro Bowl, he said, I need more superstars. After losing in the playoffs, they beat the Eagles. They lose in the second round. And he was at the Pro Bowl, made some waves, said, hey, man, we need superstars. We got to win with superstars. And you know what? The club went out, acquiesced, and traded for Jamal Adams, traded for Carlos Dunlap, added some stars. This is him, I think, flexing his muscle, saying at this stage, I need more help up front. Lockett and Metcalf are pretty solid. I got a few defensive stars still that can make some plays, but we need to be better up front. And a year ago, they went volume, Doug. They signed B.J. Finney. They signed Aboye. They signed Brandon Shell. They signed a bunch of guys, and I think he would have preferred Jack Conklin. Spend on one. Give me a bona fide difference maker that can block Leonard Floyd, that can block Aaron Donald. Don't just give me volume. Give me difference makers up front. I think more than anything, that's what Russell's trying to flex.
Yeah. The problem with that is, like in the NFL, when you sign a free agent, the hit rate's like 33%, right? Yep. And so that's, I think, why the Seahawks are better. They feel they're better spreading out instead of locking in on one guy. You lock in on one guy and that guy doesn't play and you are screwed.
Yes.
Royally screwed. So it's a philosophical difference, but it's a classic difference between management, who's they've been through this for a long time. They're like, look, dude, it's a 50% hit rate on first round draft picks, 33% hit rate on free agents. Like, let's be smart and play the numbers game, as opposed to players that think they want to chase names and they're yeah. convinced that everybody works.
Yeah, and you know what else is a little odd about this, Doug, is they had about 2.5 weeks together where they were finding a new coordinator. And by all accounts, from what I had heard behind the scenes, this was the guy, Shane Waldron from the Rams, that Russell was most excited about. I mean, I think they interviewed like 14 guys. You know, same approach that they take in free agency and the draft and everything else, turn over every stone, try to learn as much as possible. They did the same thing. And when push came to shove, from the people that I talked to behind the scenes, you know, Russ was super excited about this. Getting a guy that, you know, minimizes some of the offensive line challenges. That's what McVay's scheme does so well with the Rams. And adding a little bit more variety and finding more layups and finding more answers. And literally a week later, on the heels of that, you go public in this manner. And it, to me, as I said, just didn't necessarily add up.
It's a slap in the face.
Yeah.
And I watched the Super Bowl and I saw a bunch of names playing for Tampa. And he thinks he's LeBron. He thinks he's Tom Brady. That's what I took, because he mentioned both of them. You see Tom Brady and you see LeBron. Like, okay,
yes.
Dude, easy.
yes.
You know, which one of these things is not like the other? LeBron, Tom Brady, Russell Wilson.
Went, gosh, I remember being like Mahomes, right? When I came out of college, I ran 4.5, and I was the wizard. I was the guy making throws that everybody was like, no way. How is that even humanly possible? And then on the other end of it, he looks at Tom and says, you're right, man, that's the mogul. That's been doing it for 20 years and the greatest of all time, and I fancy myself on that path and want to be on that path, and I'm looking at the progression of his game and how he operates and just dissects everything from between the tackles and realizes if he's going to play till he's 40, or in his mind, 45, the game is going to have to start looking a little bit more like Brady's than it was like Mahomes.
Okay. What was worse for Kansas City? The game plan, not including, you know, chipping the DNs, or the fact that they didn't adjust when it was quite obvious they couldn't block Kansas City?
The game plan going in, I can somewhat understand, and I debate this all the time, both with college coaches and pro coaches, because and you know this, Doug, you love coaching, you've been around every game there is, and a coach says, hey man, this is what we do. Okay, we are who we are.
Oh, old football guy. We do it well. Make them adjust.
But here's the deal. When you say to your team, this is the line that they walk. Okay, this is the line they walk. If they go in and go, hey, man. Okay, so I'll give you a perfect example. My very first start in the NFL. Okay, my first start way back when, leather helmets and everything, was against the Carolina Panthers and Reggie White. Mike Holmgren was the head coach of the Hawks. Reggie White, you know, won a Super Bowl with Coach. He knew how unbelievable he was, but he was 16 years into the league. But you know what we did that game plan? We changed everything. We were going to slide on our Fox 2 protection. We're going to slide to Reggie White. We're going to do all of this. Oh, my gosh, we got to handle Reggie White. And honestly, I think it in some ways backfired. Like, whoa, 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 whoa. A, he's not what he was 10 years ago. But B, you don't believe we can do our normal stuff. Like, you think we've got to change everything. You think we got to chip, we got to keep people in, we got to change everything. So you're telling your O-line, yeah, you guys aren't good enough, right? I mean, that's the other side of it. That's why you walk in and you may say, and Andy and Eric said, hey, we do what we do. Patrick will get the ball out. We'll scat protect 92% of the time. This is who we are. You know, we believe in our guys up front. Well, I think it's more, if you want me to answer the question, I think it's more of the latter. After that first quarter, when you couldn't block those guys, now you adapt. Okay, now everyone realizes, including those tackles, I can't block these guys. I need a tight end. I need chipping. I need help. It should have never been 92% of the time in five-man protection. So I think it fell a little bit more on that in-game adjustment than it did some of the psychology going in.
I thought it was the difference in the coaching was night and day, and the lack of adjustments were kind of embarrassing to Kansas City. I thought that meaning, like, how can you not change? I really don't understand it. No, but I did love that Mahomes didn't throw anybody under the bus afterwards. Said, I got to get rid of the ball quicker. It's not on the offensive line, right? Like, that's
so. You want one more quick little story? Yeah. I know you're probably up against. Yeah, no, I'll give you one more quick little story from the Wayback Machine. Do you remember? So the Packers win the Super Bowl. They go back and they lose to Elway and the Broncos. And I think the Packers had a much better team and overall. But they brought in that game, the Broncos brought, I think it was Robinson, was the defensive coordinator, Greg Robinson, a will-free safety blitz against a protection that the Packers did not have a good answer to. And they hit him over and over and over. And that adjustment did not happen in game. So for years later, guess what we did in the system? We made sure in that system, right? I mean, this is years later when I get into the NFL. Like, hey, man, this 57 protection, it was put in because of that Super Bowl. Because of just the fact that they couldn't figure it out in game. Was so irritating, was so annoying, was so bothersome that truly a protection went into the West Coast system because of that blitz the Broncos threw at the Packers that day. Yeah, and I think after the fact, Andy and Eric and the rest of the crew will go, that can't happen again. If we get into a game like that, we can never be 92% of the time five-man protection. We've got to adapt better in game.
Brock, great stuff, man. Can't wait to talk about more of this quarterback stuff next time you join us. Appreciate you being our guest in the herd.
You got it, Doug. Sounds good.
All right. That's Brock Huard, of course, longtime quarterback in the NFL, quarterback family, and NFL on Fox analyst. Are the Cowboys really this close to contending? We'll discuss that next.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
Leaving for Colin, this is The Herd for all your last-minute Valentine's needs. Head to 1-800-Flowers right now. Get 24 multicolored roses for $34.99 or upgrade to 24 red roses for $10 more. To order, go to 1-800-Flowers.com, click on the radio icon, and enter the code Colin. Question for you. How close do you think the Cowboys are to truly contending? Truly contending. This is Troy Aikman when he was asked by USA Today how close he thought his former team was to contending.
When healthy, I just don't believe that this is a team that's in a rebuilding mode. I know that in Jerry's mind, they've never been in rebuilding mode. You know, that's the optimist that he is. But I would agree with him right now that I don't, you know, you get Dak back and you get this, the offensive line back healthy and with the skill players that they have on offense and find a few pieces on defense, they should be right in the thick of things next year.
Okay, but what does in the thick of things mean? I generally agree, but you got to figure out, you got to figure out the Dak contract piece, right? And then with that, how do you navigate? And you'll save some money in the cap if you sign him to a long-term deal. Eventually, that cap hit will be a real one in a year or two based upon how the contract is written. If it's me, do I consider playing the quarterback market? I do. I don't think they will. There's two different conversations. Should they or will they? This is like the, should Eli Manning be a Hall of Famer? It's an interesting discussion. Will he? Of course he's going to be a Hall of Famer. It's Eli Manning, he played forever. He never got hurt. He won two Super Bowls, and he beat the Patriots in both Super Bowls, including the last undefeated regular season team. He's going to the Hall of Fame. No question. Okay? So we can debate what they should do with Dak Prescott, especially considering the Jared Goff long-term deal turned out to be a bad one. The Carson Wentz long-term deal turned out to be a bad one. Hell, Russell Wilson, Aaron Rodgers, Deshaun Watson, all of those deals are made harder, make managing their egos, the teams, the salaries, everything harder because those deals, there's so much baked into them where you can't move off of them if you fall out of love or they fall out of love with you. That said, they're going to sign Dak Prescott to a long-term deal. So let's put that almost out of our minds. Are they close? Close to what? Right? For people who, and obviously Troy's forgotten more about football than I'll know. Okay, but I have to point out that we are a year removed from a fairly healthy Dallas Cowboys roster that could not come out of the NFC East, that had two of the worst teams in the league, the Washington football team, the Giants. And the Eagles were incredibly banged up, and that's when Carson Wentz beat them. That was 2 years ago when they were relatively healthy. Okay, now we have Dak coming off an injury. Washington, by everybody's account, like, do I think they're going to be great? Probably not. But do I think they're well-run, have a great defensive front, and are only going to get, they couldn't get worse at the quarterback position, right? I mean, Alex Smith, God bless him, he can't play football anymore. He just can't. It's amazing that he came back and played and started and won a couple of games. But he can't really play football. He can't move. Can't move, and he's not that good a thrower, right? It's just, that's not happening. But however limited Washington is, they're better than they've been. However, whatever you think of Daniel Jones, the Giants are getting better. Giants are better. Washington's better. And the Eagles, I don't know. I don't know. They're just a mess. Are they? Should they be the best team in the NFC East? Hell yeah, of course they should. Of course they should. And they're not going to play a first-place schedule. And they should be able to draft well this year. But their line isn't as good and is older than it's been. Their defense is a bit of a mess. Now they're going through another change in defensive coordinator and style. I think one that fits their personnel. Are they a contender? They should win the NFC East if Dak is healthy. But in the NFC, when you have the Packers, in the NFC, when you have the Rams, the Niners, who will be back, the Seahawks, heck, even the Cardinals. In the NFC, when you have Tampa, that's real. That's real. We'll see about the Saints, but their defense, their playmakers, we'll see who they choose at quarterback. I don't think they're nearly as close to competing for a Super Bowl, although I do believe they should be the best team in the NFC East. But again, remember, when they should have been 2 years ago, they weren't. We can use this year and go like, well, they weren't healthy. Okay, the previous year, they were healthy. They couldn't beat any of the good teams. They haven't beaten a good team in 2 years. And by good team, I mean above 500 playoff team. Healthy, not healthy, doesn't seem to matter. coming up. There's a lot of talk about Pat Mahomes. And on one hand, I want to give him a ton of credit for being accountable for how poorly he and his offense played in the Super Bowl. On the other hand, how'd we get to this point where he's beyond reproach? The numbers, I'm told, don't lie. And the numbers aren't exactly friendly towards Pat Mahomes and how he's played in two Super Bowl appearances. What we really need to admit, upcoming next, I'm Doug Gottlieb. This is The Herd.